content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour. Now, here's your host, Dave Krieger.
And we're back at 12 noon Central Time here on this Thursday edition of the Power Hour. And for those of you that are dialing us in early in the morning, well, it's a rebroadcast. So, you know, until we get back on at 11 a.m. and start recording again, the new broadcast won't be posted. But I did have a chance to go look at a YouTube video that was put out by Kelpie Wilson, who joins us on the show now, about biochar and how it's made and what it's used for. And we're going to be spending some time with her today on the horn discussing this. And if you have any questions, the number is 844-769-2944. You wait for the prompts, press 1 to get in the studio. And our discussion is what the benefits of biochar are, how to make it, what it's all about, the whole nine yards. I mean, this is going to be an education here because it's all about solutions and all about what looks like restoring our environment by doing something to change the soil, among other things. Kelpie Wilson, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Now, you're a mechanical engineer with 35 years of experience in renewable energy, sustainable forestry, and resource conservation. What I was amazed is that the YouTube video had something federal symbol on it as you were going into detail. You know, it was only a minute and 46 seconds long. Just to let you know, I did watch it. So, I watched it because I would know what the time is, you know, because people say, yeah, I saw it. And then they don't tell you, you know, specifics about it. But they actually surrounded a big pile of wood and scrap with a metal sheath and then set fire to it. And then, of course, it burned. And then they added more stuff to it and it burned. And then eventually they undid the sheath and took it off from around the area, the circular area they were burning this, and created what looks like biochar. Could you explain that process and how they did it, since people aren't watching the video?
Sure, yeah, and you can see that video on my YouTube channel. It's just Kelpie Wilson on YouTube. And so that federal symbol, that is actually the logo for U.S. Rake Force, which is a group of veterans who are forestry contractors. So it's not really official, you know, federal agency. But it's, so U.S. Rake Force, they're a great group of people. They made that video. That was our first training session with them. And they named their company after President Trump's initiative to rake the forests. So that's where that comes from. So, you know, we're in the West. I'm in Oregon. They're up in Washington. And, of course, we have this big problem with forest fires here. And that's because we have been too aggressive over the last 100 years of always putting out fires. And, you know, that's not how these forests evolved. They evolved with fire. And same also a lot of the grasslands, you know, where you all are in the Midwest, those evolved with fire. And that's how charcoal gets in soil, and that's why biochar is a natural thing in soil. So you wanted to hear about how we made it. We're basically just kind of mimicking what a forest fire would do, but in a much more controlled way. So what we do here in the West a lot is cut the small trees and the brush, which are really the flammable fire danger. The big trees really aren't that flammable. And then we pile them up and burn them just to get rid of them to, you know, make safe zones around our homes and fire breaks out in the woods. And so that makes a lot of smoke. And then the other problem with it is when you burn a pile of brush and wood down to ash, you actually burn up the soil underneath. So you leave what we call a burn scar, and you know, things don't grow in it. It's just becomes a place where weeds can show up, and the native plants don't come back very easily. So what we're doing with the with the ring, and that's called the Ring of Fire. And that's a piece of equipment that I manufacture and sell. And you can find that on ringoffire.earth. And it's really simple. It's just it's a two-layer ring. There's an inner ring and an outer ring that's a heat shield. And we just burn our pile inside there. And what that does is it controls the air just enough so we don't burn it all to ash. We just burn it to the charcoal stage, and then we put it out with water and save it.
Interesting. Now, when you do this, because you call it bioactivated charcoal, I mean, this is not stuff that you can take and scoop out and put in your grill and put lighter fluid on it and grill hamburgers on. I mean, that's not what this is, right?
Well, you could do that, but it's really not the same as what we're used to seeing with barbecue charcoal, even like lump charcoal, which they make from hardwood. They make it in a different process that's actually a lower temperature process. And so that traditional way of making charcoal, you kind of bake it and heat it up just enough so that, the gas comes out of it, the wood gas. And some of that will recondense back in the char. So it's a heavier, weightier char. It's all clogged up with tar and oil, which is cool for fuel, because that's energy. But we don't really want to put that in soil. So when we make biochar in our kilns, in that ring of fire, and we're cooking at a much higher temperature. So it's a lot more like, it's very light and porous. It's a lot more like activated charcoal, which people may be familiar with, that you use in a water filter. So it's more like activated charcoal than like a fuel charcoal.
Okay, so now if you take this out of the pile, because I saw that what was left over is a big ring of black, and they're taking rakes and they're raking it all around and throwing water on it and reducing it just to nothing but cooled activated charcoal or biochar, as you're calling it. Can you take, is this something I wanted to get into as far as regenerative farming. Would this be useful for something like that?
Absolutely. So I grow a huge garden with my neighbors. We grow all our own vegetables, and biochar is really key for that. And so there's the terminology can be a little bit confusing. So there's activated charcoal, which refers to steam activation, which is an industrial process that gives it tons of surface area for water filtration. And then what we're calling is bioactivated. So that means when you make a charcoal, you're making it at a really high temperature, like almost 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And so it's dead. I mean, it's just pure carbon. It's just a carbon, mineral carbon. There's nothing alive in it. But it's all, these little pores, and it absorbs everything you put on it. So you need to bioactivate it before you put it in your soil. And it's really easy to do. What I do is I just add it to my compost. And, for anybody who's got, say, backyard chickens or any kind of livestock, you put it in the coop or the barn, and it's so good because it absorbs odors. And those odors, of course, are the nutrients. And so it sanitizes your animal barns, and then it preserves the nutrients. So that's one really easy way to use it.
So now the thing is, though, is that if you put it in your chicken coop, because of the fact, obviously, they poop all over the place, and this is very high in ammonia. You're saying that this biochar soaks up all that potential ammonia that could be forming, and the birds peck at this stuff? I mean, is that part of what they do, or do they just ignore it? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, they will eat some of it, and it's very good for them. Charcoal is known as the universal antidote, right? Because any kind of poisoning, the first, almost any kind, I won't say every kind, but almost any kind of poisoning, the first thing they'll do is give you a charcoal slurry to drink. And because it absorbs all kinds of things. And so for that reason, charcoal, feeding charcoal to animals is of great interest. And if I could take a minute and just talk about my book, because I just published the Biochar Handbook. It's published by Chelsea Green. And this is like accumulating all my like 20 years of experience with biochar. And there's a whole chapter in there about feeding charcoal to animals, including human animals. you know, I brush my teeth with it, and it's improved my dental health. There's also some really cool information about what people used to do. So back in the 1900s, there was a whole lot of interest in charcoal, and people would routinely feed charcoal to their dairy cows because they would it would improve their milk production. It just kept the animals healthier.
So the thing is, though, is that with biochar, you really, if what you're saying is true, and they eat this stuff and it helps their digestive system as well as their immune system, why would you need antibiotics if you're feeding your cattle this stuff?
Well, you know, that is really a good point, because it's not that it's actually an antibiotic. It doesn't work exactly like an antibiotic. But why do we feed cattle antibiotics in the first place? Mainly because we keep them in very unsanitary, unhealthy environments. And so if they're fed antibiotics, they can put on more weight gain. And with charcoal, yeah, you wouldn't feed them antibiotics just routinely, because you'd be improving the health of their environment and their digestive system. So it's more of a probiotic approach, really.
Huh.
And yeah.
That's interesting. Now, as far as, yeah, I wanted to get into the benefits of biochar, because I've got a huge amount of show notes here to talk about as far as improving. I mean, seriously, I was scrolling down the screen here and just looking at this stuff going, holy smokes, this is huge what this stuff does, like improving soil fertility. I mean, that's where I got the question about regenerative farming, because that's supposed to be the big thing now, is people are supposed to be paying attention to. And with all of these chemtrails and the other garbage that's going on that Dayton Wigington has been telling us about on geoengineeringwatch.org, we're sitting here going, okay, if we're being inundated with all this garbage and these plastics and everything else in our soil, and we're supposed to be figuring out ways, because everybody's complaining their soil is messed up now, this is one way to fix it. Would it not be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so first of all, biochar can absorb heavy metals. So if you're concerned about heavy metals, it's been used to remediate mine tailings. So, for instance, there are, you know, thousands of abandoned mine sites, mostly probably in the West, where they're just tailings piles that are full of, you know, just rocks that have metals in them and nothing grows on them. And so they will add some biochar and a little bit of other organic matter, and they can revegetate a tailings pile that hasn't grown a blade of grass on it for 100 years. So, you know, that's one thing that biochar can do, that can remediate polluted soils. If you're in an urban environment, you know, where there's been in your soil, the biochar can really help that. And then it prevents the uptake of those metals into the plants. It's basically, so think about it like this. Burning coal, what is coal? Coal is old plant material that's been compressed, you know, with heat and pressure for millions of years. And it's very much like charcoal, right? Because it turns into the form of carbon that's similar to charcoal, but it's got all this other stuff in it, including a lot of heavy metals and other pollutants. And so when we put biochar in the soil, it starts accumulating any pollutants and metals in the soil. And so we're kind of making coal again in a way. So that's one way to look at it. And then it also holds water and nutrients. So, for instance, some of the people working in the Midwest, you know, where there's huge fields of corn that are they're maybe over-fertilized with nitrogen, because nobody wants to, like, not have enough fertilizer on, so they usually put on too much. And then it rains, and then, you know, you've got those tile drains to drain the fields, and all that water is full of nitrates and ends up in the waterways and pollutes the rivers. And so there, in some places, people are now putting in biochar in the tile drain systems, in the outlets to collect all that nutrient. And then what you're doing is you're collecting the nitrate in the biochar, and then you can dig the biochar out, and it's a fertilizer, and it's a slow release fertilizer that holds on to the nitrogen and doesn't let it leach out again, so the plants can actually use it.
Right. Now, I've seen the video, and I've seen this double ring thing that you make. What do these kits cost? Just the ring of fire. What do they cost?
Well, I sell it for $18.95, which is, you know, considering the price of steel, there's a lot of steel in it. That's a pretty good price. And then there's shipping. So if people are interested in buying it from me, they can go to wilsonbiochar.com or ringoffire.earth and fill out a form, and I'll get you a shipping quote. I really recommend, if possible, find some neighbors who want to do this as well. It's a great way to build community, because you can go in on one kiln and then share it, because you're not going to use it every day yourself. It's pretty durable. It's going to last for hundreds of burns.
So people would just basically like grab their pickup trucks, load them up with wood and scrap and lumber and all the other junk that, you know, refuse from piles of trees that they've cut down or whatever the case may be, and just bring that over to the community ring of fire, and then just throw it all in there and start doing its thing.
Yeah, you can do it that way, or you can move the ring of fire. So the reason why I invented this particular shape and style of kiln is that it's modular, so it's panels that you bolt together, and when it all breaks down, you can put it in the back of a station wagon. You can go to where the wood is, which is a lot easier than trying to transport a lot of wood. You know, it's just a lot of work. So go to where the piles are and set up the kiln right there. It takes about 10-15 minutes to set up. It's all just thumb screws. You bolt the panels together. You load it up and you light it and just you feed it. You'll feed it for a couple of hours. So it really can take a lot of material. It reduces it about 10 to 1. So for every, you know, 10 cubic yards of material, you know, and that's like, you know, brush, right? You'll get about a yard of biochar. And if you were to buy biochar, and you can buy biochar, and I encourage people to do it if they can get it and they don't want to make it, there's, you know, more and more of a biochar industry out there. But if you were to buy it, it would cost you probably $150 a yard at least to get to buy it. So if you can make it yourself, you're going to save money.
Well, that's an interesting way for people out there that are looking for an investment and help the environment out. I mean, there's a solution waiting to happen. The thing is that people are using it in the garden, and anybody who's an entrepreneur that wants to do this, the book that you wrote basically is like a making biochar for beginners, right?
Yeah, it's called the Biochar Handbook, and it's for beginners, definitely, but it also has some advanced material, mainly around just kind of understanding how it works. So I really try to, I always love to do science education with kids. And so, I really like to boil things down so that anybody can understand it, because that's how I explain it to myself, honestly. So I'm really trying to explain the science for people so you understand how it works, so you know how to use it in your soil, because every soil is different. Every crop is different. And so I'm going to give you in this book some tools for not only understanding how it works, but also testing it. So you can test it in your soil mix, doing a small, what we call a pot trial. So I give you the instructions for doing a pot trial in pots, with cucumber seeds, to actually test your different combinations in your soil to see what's going to work best for you. It's real simple, but I give you all, step-by-step instructions for doing that.
The other thing, too, is that if you're going to do one of these rings, from the looks of things, you did this in a fairly open clearing. You don't want to put this in the middle of the woods and try and do this without risking setting the rest of the place on fire, right?
Well, actually, we do it a lot in the middle of the woods. It's just we do it at the right time of year. So we'll do it in winter here, when the ground's wet, and we really don't have much fire danger. So, yes, I do talk a lot about fire safety. you don't want to just be lighting things on fire, not knowing what you're doing. So there's a lot.
Yeah, no, I get that. But, you know, you give somebody, Kelpie, you give somebody something like this and say, look how easy it is to put this ring together. And then they get these wild ideas and go out and do something without examining all the facts and reading the book. They just get excited because here's a new way to make money. If you're selling this stuff for $150 a yard, for God's sakes, I'm just like, wow, this is incredible. And not only that, but I mean, water retention, drainage, I mean, all the things, reduction of soil acidity, that means you can make it more alkaline. I know we're going to take some questions here. Eric in Missouri, you have a question for Kelpie Wilson.
Yeah, I was listening to regenerative ranchers that they move their cattle like two or three times a day. But they also have a place where it's covered, and they chip up a bunch of junk trees and put them in there for the cattle to walk on and stomp on. Then they throw corn in there for the hogs to root through and eat, and they use that for fertilizer. Now, on your biochar, what do you chop that up and you put it in manure spreader and spread it on the fields, or how do you use it for like pastures and fields?
Yeah, good question. So I work with a grass-fed beef operation here in Oregon, and what they do is they just put it in the feed area. The chunky biochar. So it's, think about the biochar, when you make it in the ring, it can be large chunks. It's a whole range of sizes, but there can be some, you know, chunks that are like 2 or 3 inches big, but they're very brittle. So as soon as a cow steps on it, it's crushed into little, you know, little fragments. So you put it in where the cattle, in their feed area, and so where they're congregating, any place they're congregating, they'll walk on it, they'll poop on it, and then you scoop it up, and you can let it compost for a bit, and then spread it in the manure spreader, just like you said. It's
okay.
We want to find ways, so we're not changing. Not making things more difficult, right? We're just kind of, it's an add-on to what you're already doing.
I appreciate your question, Eric. Thanks so much for your call. See, folks, if you have any other questions, that was a legitimate question. We have time left in the show. So 844-769-2944. This is huge. I mean, you're now doing this large organic vegetable garden, and this is like, you know, a large organic vegetable garden on steroids, pretty much, from what you're indicating.
Yeah, I call it my victory garden.
Ah, there you go. Back to World War II days. All right. Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, how long have you been 35 years in this? I mean, or is this biochar something that's newer than your 35 years of experience in renewable energy?
It's newer because I only heard about it in like 2005, 2006 is when, you know, we first started hearing about these soils in the Amazon, the Terra Preta, which is Portuguese for dark earth. And, you know, there were news stories about it. And I heard about it. And I went, whoa, this is cool. So these people in the Amazon, and, you know, this is thousands of years. And nobody thought anybody could do agriculture in the rainforest, right? Because when you cut down the rainforest trees, the soil is actually very poor. And in the rain, it just washes away and you can't really grow anything on it. But there are these certain areas in the Amazon where people were living in high concentrations. And they had their cooking fires. They were making charcoal. They were, you know, had their human waste and their food waste. And they were piling it all out in their fields and creating this rich black soil. And so these were human created soils. And when I first heard about that, I went, oh my goodness, that sounds like permanent compost, right? You add carbon to the soil. That's really the key thing with regenerative agriculture, is we have depleted the carbon in the soils. And so carbon is what makes a soil resilient and gives it the ability to regenerate and to hold microbes and nutrients. So because of our chemical agriculture practices, we've actually burned out a lot of the carbon. So we can put it back. So that's the exciting thing to me, is that we can regenerate our soils by adding carbon to them.
And we've already talked about the fact that once you put biochar in there, it can repair the soil by sucking up all those toxic heavy metals out of the soil. So it basically helps, besides the reduction of soil acidity, It helps you to retain water and increase crop yields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you were asking about how to use it in regenerative farming. I mean, the manure route, if you have livestock, is definitely the most straightforward, easiest way to do it. But if you don't have animals and you're growing a large field of corn or soybeans or whatever, here's a couple of tips. First of all, if you're growing a cover crop or a legume crop, you can just add plain biochar and add it right with the seed. So you might not you're always going to have limited amounts of biochar because it can be costly. And even if you make it yourself, it's still, that's your time. And you don't have unlimited amounts of biochar. So add it with the seed in a legume crop because the legumes fix their own nitrogen. And so the biochar will actually promote the rhizobia, which are the microbes, the bacteria that do the nitrogen fixing, that work with the legume. And so I'll pull up a pea or a bean in my garden, a plant, and I'll find those big pink nodules on the roots and surrounded by biochar. And that's the colony of bacteria that fixes nitrogen. So the quickest way to regenerate your soil is add the biochar right with your seed, and you don't even have to add a lot, and then plant that legume crop, and you'll be on your way, if you're looking at a large field row cropping.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you can also, if you're planting corn or something like that, you can also just band it in the row. Like if you're doing no-till or low, minimum tillage, just band it with, mix it with some other fertilizer, add it to your dry fertilizer mix, and just band it in the row below the seed. There's farmer in Missouri who's doing that. He's been doing that for a while. You can read about that in Acres magazine. They've done a story on him. So there's lots of ways to use it in agriculture.
It's amazing. Sherry in Kansas, you're on the phone with Kelpie Wilson. Go ahead.
Hello. I can attest that, at least the success so far of my garden this year, I did throw some charcoal. I have a rocket stove that I use in the wintertime, and I had, when I shut it down and I get big chunks or, it's not completely ash, in the morning I would throw that in my compost pile. So I had charcoal when I, used that compost. And I... that's one big difference that I did this year, and it seems, I do think that it's helped, having the charcoal in the soil more. I've got a question for you. Now, the ashes from your stove, they have, how much minerals, I've heard that, the ones that aren't volatilized, that your wood ash has a lot of minerals in it. Is that true?
We'll get to that after the break. We're up to the break wall right now at 28 after the hour. We'll be back at about 33 and continue our conversation with Kelpie Wilson. Stay with us.
For the past 20 years, the Power Mall has been a trailblazer, leading the way in providing our customers with only the best health, wellness, and readiness products. We have worked hand in hand, helping to grow many small businesses, and we continue to provide exceptional customer service, educating our customers so they can make informed purchases. You can shop with confidence, knowing that we have personally vetted every product that we offer. Your health and well-being means so much to us. We have championed voting with your dollars, and when you shop with the Power Mall, you are helping to keep ever so important and often censored health information in the forefront. Buy from the good guys. Shop theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com. Or call 877-817-8255. 9829.
Come to the Power Mall today and purchase Mediterranean Black Seed Oil from North American Urban Spice. Exclusively from the genetic source and never standardized. Cold pressed, it's so good it supports cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, digestive, neurologic health, and so much more. Said to be good for everything but death itself, come find the best prices on Black Seed capsules or 8-ounce varieties when you visit thepowermall.com. Or call 877-817-9829 to purchase.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I have a good friend with me here today. She has been taking the calcium bentonite clay that she purchased from the Power Mall for many, many years now. And I asked her to sit with me and explain to the listeners what she uses the clay for.
Thanks. So just to let you know, we use it on a daily basis. I will put a teaspoon of calcium bentonite clay into a glass of water and drink it before bed for detox. We've done weekly foot soaks for my husband who has diabetes. We use it for facials. I use it once a week for my clay bath detox. We've used it on spider bites, insect bites, and I've also used it for the swelling in my ankle after surgery.
Oh, yes, I do remember when you had the surgery. To order the clay, please call 877-817-9829 or go to thepowermall.com.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Many Americans are growing increasingly concerned about the rapidly growing U.S. government deficits. Recognizing the additional printing of paper money devalues U.S. currency. To compensate, American gold and silver coins will provide wealth protection. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins delivered directly to our clients. You can reach us at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Why invest in all the great natural supplements from the Power Mall and then use a toothpaste loaded with harmful synthetic chemicals like fluoride? You want really healthy checkups, right? People who switch to Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash are reporting healthy-looking gums and whiter teeth. Both the Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash are formulated with natural products like zinc, folic acid, cloves, and myrrh. It's nature's answer to preventing plaque, reducing the development of cavities, and promoting healthy teeth and gums. Vitamir toothpaste comes in original formula and also with CoQ10 and xylitol, as well as in a great-tasting orange-flavored children's formula, too. Get Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash from the Power Mall today, and you, too, can have healthy checkups. Call 877-817-9829. Or order from thepowermall.com.
And we're back here on the Power Hour at 33 minutes after the hour in this Thursday edition. And we have Kelby Wilson joining us by phone. And we were in the middle of a question with Sherry. Kelby, were you making notes?
No. In fact, I forgot what the question was.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask Sherry to repeat the question. Oh, Sherry's gone. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. We were talking about putting she was taking stuff from her stove and putting it in the ground and attesting the fact that she could do that. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. So ash has minerals. It has the minerals that were in the whatever you burned in the stove, so the wood. And those are valuable. You know, it's going to be potassium. There's going to be, you know, maybe some trace minerals like, you know, boron or manganese or magnesium. So those are really good. The thing about ash is that it's very alkaline. So, you know, it can be, you want to use it sparingly. And you don't want to just dump a pile of ash in your soil. You also need to know your soil pH. And this is really important for using biochar as well, because biochar has ash in it, And so it's going to tend to be alkaline. And that's great if you have acidic soil. You know, I have acidic soil where I am. But you want to always test your soil pH so you know what you're dealing with, because some places, for instance, you know, like western Nebraska and more desert, drier environments will have, can have pretty alkaline soil. So you don't want to make it more alkaline. The good news with is that with biochar and ash as well, if you add them to compost or manure, they're going to balance out. You know, after they compost, you're going to end up with something that's probably pretty pH neutral. So, pH testing is really easy to do. You just get some of that pH paper. Don't bother with the meters. They don't, you know, they're hard to calibrate. They're not that accurate. Just get some good quality pH paper. Get a little jar and put some pH neutral water in it. You know, if your water's alkaline, that's going to affect the test. So some bottled water is going to be pH neutral, and then put a, you know, like 3-to-1, like if you have a tablespoon of your soil or your biochar or your ash, whatever you want to test, put it in that jar and then put 3 tablespoons of water in it, shake it up really well, let it sit for a few minutes, and then dip that paper in there. And you can see, you know, looking at the color, is it alkaline? Is it acid? And it's just a good thing to know how to do when you're working with biochar and compost and all that stuff.
So it's not really necessary to contact somebody at the Agricultural Extension Service and have them test it for you to give you the actual breakdown of the soil.
Not for pH. Yeah. I mean, if you want all the nutrients in your soil and all, you know, all more detailed soil tests, then, well, you know, you can, there are labs, you can send in your own soil sample and they'll usually give you a report that helps you interpret it. And you can get a good soil test done for about $30, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's worth doing. It's worth doing at least a little bit just to know more about your soil.
Yeah, before you go planting stuff in it or buying, you know, farmland for crops. And that's another thing, too, because, you know, people sometimes don't understand that when they're buying a tract of land that the soil there might actually suck and you can't do anything with it. So, you know, this is one of the things. I mean, seriously, I mean, I've seen a lot of farmers waste a whole lot of time in floodplains and places like that where all this, there's a lot of washout and whatnot. So interesting take on that. Brady in Arizona, you have a question about biochar. Brady's gone. Okay. As far, I like the idea of taking it and putting it in compost, Kelpie. This seems to be the smartest thing, and then putting it in the chicken coop and using it for livestock as far as mm-hmm. treating their manure and turning it, neutralizing it, basically. That's kind of where we're going with this?
Yeah. And, you know, there's some big composting operations that are using it. And so not only does the compost improve the biochar improves the compost. So there's a company called Missouri Organic Recycling. They're in Kansas City, and they take all the green waste, all the food waste, everything from Kansas City, both sides of the river. And they, you know, they've got a huge site, and they're just composting these giant windrows of stuff. And they started using biochar a few years ago, and their composting process started going a lot better. So you have these big piles, they can get anaerobic, right? They get stinky. They have to turn them so that they compost properly with enough air. And what biochar does in the compost is it holds air. And so they could cut their turning in half. And that saves a lot of diesel fuel because it's a big machine that runs through there and turns it. So they didn't have to turn it as often, and it finished more quickly. And I found that, so it does really help the composting process. So it makes a high-quality compost that's just got more nutrient and, you know, more biology, just full of all the microbes you want. And then there's fewer emissions of ammonia, you know, even carbon dioxide and methane. So it's a really great boon to the composting process.
Interesting. So now Missouri Organic Recycling in Kansas City. I made a note of that because that sounds like a whole nother subject matter here that we could get into.
You should have them on. There's a guy named Dan Slaughter who works with them, who's an educator, and he's great. Speaker. You'd be good to have on your show.
Yep, I just made a note of that. Thank you so much for that, Kelby. Brady is back on the phone. A little termination disruption there. Brady, what say you about biochar?
Yeah, you guys are talking about the soil. Well, I'm out here in the desert. Some days it's 115 degrees, and the soil is like beach sand. So kind of what a lot of us do out here, I don't know if you're familiar with the nylon grow bags for vegetables. They come in all different sizes, like 10-gallon, 15-gallon, but they're above ground, and you pack all your good soil in, and you grow your vegetables right in there. And what's nice about the nylon bag, you don't get that where you get the smell from the bacteria and stuff composting in the soil. It actually, it retains moisture, and it's really good. Your plants thrive, and the best thing is, with all these hailstorms, you can pick your vegetables back up and put them in your garage when there's a hailstorm. So you can save your plants. You got everything in the ground in one storm, like it's going to happen this year. You're going to see all the severe weather they put at it. They're going to try to wipe out our crops.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a good idea. And if you add biochar to those bags, it'll help them hold water better. So that can work very well.
There's your solution, Brady. Appreciate your call. Wow, there's just, a lot to absorb here. that's you're just talking about water retention, and I said that's a lot to absorb. Okay. The thing is, as far as drainage goes, because there's some things in your book that you're talking about as far as drainage. I mean, if there are issues and you are in an area that experiences runoff, you would have to have a lot of biochar to help correct the situation like that, wouldn't you?
Well, so the interesting thing about biochar is if you've got a sandy soil, so it's really free draining, and you add biochar, it'll hold on to more water and nutrients, which is what you want. If you have a heavy clay soil that's not free draining, that's getting too waterlogged, biochar will open it up and help it drain. So I know it seems like too much of a miracle, but that's really how it works. So it's just balancing things out. And if you have a heavily compacted soil, which is what I think a lot of the problems we have, there's a hard pan, it's just compacted, and the soil's not real permeable, that's a big problem everywhere as well. So
there's a lot of rock. There's a lot of rock in it, and that rock doesn't help with drainage either. It just promotes it.
Yeah, or it's just compacted, right? So, biochar can improve the tilt of that soil so that it can actually, the water will actually absorb. And in fact, it's being used a lot in cities, in urban environments. So, when you've got stormwater in a city, that's a huge problem. You can easily get flooding because you have such an impermeable environment with all that asphalt, concrete. And so you have these very expensive stormwater management systems in any kind of city, even a smaller town. And then it's got to go, all that water goes to the water treatment plant. And, it's very expensive to deal with all of that. So, there's been a lot of effort in Delaware, in the Chesapeake Bay, and also in Minneapolis and Portland, Oregon, are different cities and regions where they've been working on this, using biochar to, just even in the little berms, on the sides of the street. So wherever little patch of grass there is or greenery, they can improve the soil with biochar so it absorbs water more easily. And they'll even create these rain gardens, specifically for absorbing rainwater. And these have been done a lot, and they put compost in them and sand. And that works great for a while because it makes a nice, loose, fluffy soil. But then the compost, it gets consumed. The plants and the bacteria consume it, and then the soil starts compacting again. So they have to come back and fluff it up and add more compost. This all gets very expensive. So what they found is if they add biochar in there, it just maintains itself. Wow. And so the soil in those rain gardens and those berms and those, you know, green areas, they stay, well, it stays fluffy and it keeps the ability to absorb the rainwater.
I'm just wondering, and this is just, you know, off the top of my head, because you were talking about absorption. Could you not use biochar in lateral fields in a ET septic system?
Well, you know, my friend Kathleen Draper has been trying that. She just built a house, and so she's at Finger Lakes Biochar. Look her up. She's got a really interesting blog on how she built her house with biochar.
Oh, my. You know,
she put it in the plaster. She put it in the concrete. And then she put it in her drain field. And I think she's had a couple issues with it as far as, you know, it settled in a little too much because, we're still learning how to do that. But it definitely is, it's definitely a good possibility. You know, we need to find the right ratio of, you know, sand and wood chips and whatever else goes in there. So.
Right. Yeah, I understand that, especially if you're in poor soils like East Texas. It's just really crazy if you're on some sort of a surface pool where you literally you pull your truck in and you're on one of these sand beds and you try to drive away and you get stuck in the sand. The biochar definitely would. I mean, you literally have to add water to the sand in order to get your truck unstuck. That's happened to me before. So, you know, biochar seemingly would be a real solution there. Esther in Washington, you're on the phone with Kelpie Wilson. Go ahead. What's your question?
Yes, I, Kelsey, I have, I do slash burning every year. And I noticed that, to get any kind of charred wood or biochar, like you call it, I have to maintain a really low-grade fire. The heat cannot be very hot. So how do you maintain that low fire in your, in what you created? And how can this be, that heat be maintained in an open fire, like, let's say, slash burning, to create more biochar?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that question. Because I invented the kiln because... I had all these slash piles, but and it works really well. But you can also make biochar just in a regular burn pile, and there's different ways to do it. And the way you're describing is what I would call a smoldering fire. So let me ask you a question: Does your fire have a lot of smoke when you're burning it?
Usually, no. I burn hardwood, and it's. No, it gets pretty intense, let me tell you.
Okay. So the key that I found is that, so I have two objectives. I want to make biochar. I also don't want to make smoke. And what I see a lot of people doing burn piles around here is they kind of don't know what they're doing, and they don't build their pile right, and they end up smoking, making a lot of smoke, and it takes a long time. And then what happens is, people get bored and of tending the fire, and they go in the house to do something, and then the wind picks up. And pretty soon they start a grass fire, or they call a fire department. And so I like to do a fast hot fire. I know it sounds a little counterintuitive, but a fast hot fire, if you put it out at the end with water, you will make a lot of char that way, and you won't get a lot of smoke, because if you always have a flame there, it burns the smoke. Because that's what a flame is. It's just burning smoke. So what I do is I take my stuff and I build a nice small pile, not a big pile, because that's what's scary and what gets out of control. So a small pile, like 4 or 5 feet in diameter, maybe 6 feet, and, 4 feet tall. And I'll light it on the very top. And that flame will carry the heat down by radiation into the rest of the pile. And... if I have more material, I'll just let that burn down till it gets to the glowing coal stage. And if that's all I have, I'll put it out. But if I have more material, I'll just keep adding, like a few branches at a time. And each branch flames up, and the flame will, burn it. And then to the to the charcoal stage, and then it'll kind of fall apart because charcoal's brittle, and add to your pile of coals. And you just keep going like that until you've burned all your material, and then you just put it out with water, and you can make a lot of biochar that way.
Okay, so I'm presuming that the type of wood you burn also has, has an influence on this, correct?
Yes, and you know what I like to do is I burn the smaller stuff. It's mainly about the size, but yeah, there's different kinds of wood. You know, oak is more dense, pine is less dense, so it burns a little quicker. Big logs I'm going to save for firewood, or I'll just leave them in the forest because they're not a fire danger. It's just the brushy stuff that you really need to get rid of, and it's also the easiest to turn it into char.
That you're talking about small branches, maybe, 2 inches at the most or 3 inches in diameter?
Well, we can do bigger than that, up to 4 or 5 inches. I'll often do that. But it needs to be dry. You know, if it's wet, it's just going to smolder. So you want to pick the right time of the year. Usually, you're in Washington, the fall is a good time because it's become safe to burn. You've had 1 or 2 rains, but the wood isn't soaked. So that's a really good time to burn.
Yeah, well, actually, I live on the east side of the mountains, and it's like the last finger of the Sonoran Desert here. And there's a lot of orchards and, beautiful lakes, what have you. So we don't have the rain that the other side get.
Right.
In fact, we have about 16 inches of rain, and that's it. So, yeah, okay. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Check out my website. I've got a lot of information there on how to do this.
And, of course, the website, I don't even know. I'm looking up and down my show notes here, looking for the website. And what's the name of the website?
WilsonBiochar.com.
Got it. WilsonBiochar.com. There you have it. All right. Wow. Covered a lot of territory here, Kelpie. Well, and so we figured out what the cost is. What's the diameter of these two rings, the inside and outside diameter?
Yeah, the inside diameter is 7.5 feet, and then the outer ring is about 3 inches beyond that. So it's a heat shield. It protects you from the heat.
Now, are there holes in the bottom to promote airflow in and out of the ring?
No. Yeah, a lot of people look at it and they go, oh, that looks like a big solo stove, right, if you're familiar with those. No, it doesn't have any holes in the bottom, because if you did, it would promote burning more of the charcoal to ash. So that's the whole thing. All the air comes from the top of the kiln. And that actually has other benefits, too, because it keeps the flame length low. So you don't have, huge shooting flames. I mean, you might at the very beginning when you first light it. But then the material goes down in the kiln. And so it just kind of... you'll have flame, but it's not huge, and you don't get a lot of flying embers either. So it's safe. It's a safer way to burn, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and of course, now if you want to watch the YouTube video, you can. It is on Kelpie Wilson's website, WilsonBiochar.com. And I appreciate you being on the show today. We got a lot of that out of the way. And there sounds like something that those of you out there that want to do something to make money, as a solution to help the environment. I'm sure Al Gore and his, tree huggers would absolutely love you for doing what you're doing. And I know I don't take that with a grain of salt. I really don't. Anyway, but it's been a pleasure having you on the show, Kelpie. And we appreciate your time. And once again, the Biochar Handbook is available if you go on our website to the guest page on thepowerhour.com and click on there. You can access the book. And get a copy of that. Watch that YouTube video on our website and learn how to make biochar if you want an extra source of income. Because, if they're charging $150 a yard, imagine how well you could do to help the environment. So we appreciate your being on the show with us today.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed hearing people's questions and hope it was helpful.
Well, we hope so, too. And like I said, we made notes here for future use for some of the other areas and people that you've brought up. And once again, appreciate all that knowledge out there. Thank you for joining us. Folks, we're just about out of time here on the show. I just got word, as a matter of fact, when we were just about to bring things to a close, that actor Donald Sutherland has passed away at the age of 88. He starred in all of the Hunger Games series, as well as some of the older movies, Kelly's Heroes and whatnot. Just food for thought. And, of course, there's a lot of things that we didn't get to, like Queen's music catalog, the band Queen that did Bohemian Rhapsody. Sony just bought their entire catalog for over $1 billion. Amazing how that works. See, there is some money to be made in the music industry after all. Anyway, like I said, we are out of time, and we will be back tomorrow with our Friday edition here of the Power Hour. In the meantime, do some investigating. WilsonBiochar.com. Do something nice for somebody else today, if you would. In the meantime, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. We'll see you tomorrow.
Harmful organisms are everywhere affecting your health and well-being. Fortunately, there's a solution. Paratrax is a unique formula designed to help create an environment that's hostile to invading organisms. Made with a blend of herbs and other natural ingredients such as wormwood, which has often been used in traditional medicine as a dewormer. If unwanted organisms are affecting your health, Paratrax can help bring it all back in balance. Order today from thepowermill.com or call 877-817-9829. Are you tired of trying to figure out how to get all your fruits and vegetables into your busy lifestyle? OptiVita Complete Essentials provides you with 22 whole food vitamins and minerals, 29 fruits and vegetables, probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for ultimate health and nutrition. 30 individual packs, now less than $3 per day. Get your OptiVita Complete Essentials by calling 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregarest and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products. And he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sarah enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.